Chapter 33. Muhammad, the False Prophet. The vast, immense desert of Arabia lies scorching in the heat of the sun. The white desert sand reflects the fierce heat. It is a barren, desolate loneliness. Nowhere can any life be discovered. No tree, no shrub, no plant, no grass. There is no life to be seen as far as the eye can reach. But yet there is. Behold, a drove of camels is drawing near, which is being led by a few drivers. Some of the camels are laden with heavy packs full of merchandise. Without resting a moment, those strong animals drag along for hours and hours with their heavy burdens through that barren, inhospitable, sandy desert, and seemingly are not troubled by the almost unbearable heat. It is almost inconceivable how long those animals can endure it. The leader sits upon one of those camels and keeps a watchful eye upon the animals. He tells the helpers what they must do, and he takes care of everything. He bears the responsibility for the right course of things. He is still a young man who for years already has wandered through the desert. He is thoroughly acquainted with those vast sandy plains. He knows the dangers which threaten everywhere. As a boy of 11 years, he already went with the caravans which traveled right across the desert, bringing the commodities from one country to another. First he was a helper. We would say first he was a servant. Through the many years of experience, he became at home in the desert. Because he did his work so well, he did not remain a servant. But when he became older, he gradually advanced in rank until he became a leader. See him sitting there, high upon the back of one of those mounts. From time to time he casts a searching look around to see if all goes satisfactorily. Then he again looks straight ahead of him and thinks. He is not only charged with traveling through the desert, but when they have reached the place of their destination, then upon him rests the task to sell the goods they brought along at a price as high as possible. And if in this he has been successful, then he must purchase other goods at a reasonable price. That way he makes many trips. He wanders through the deserts of Arabia, through the deserts of Egypt and Syria. He comes into large, prosperous cities, and he does his work well and with pleasure. Who is that young man who, while still so young, is already a leader of this caravan? His name is Muhammad. Well, then, we shall tell one thing and another about this Muhammad in this chapter. At that time, two large Arabian cities were situated on the west coast of Arabia. Yea, those cities are still situated there. The name of the one city is Mecca. To the north of Mecca, the city of Medina is situated. However, the region in which these two cities are situated is no desert. Oh no, on the contrary. There we find farms upon which sugar cane thrives. There they cultivate coffee, dates, and pomegranates. Those crops can grow there because sufficient rain falls upon that coast. Well then, in the year 570, Muhammad was born in the city of Mecca. There he spent the first years of his life. Muhammad did not know a happy youth. He never saw nor knew his father, because he was dead already when Muhammad was born. His parents were not rich, but they were of good standing and highly respected. When Muhammad was 6 years old, his mother also died, and while still so young, that little boy was an orphan. The parentless boy came first into the home of his grandfather, who brought him up. But his grandfather also died, and the youthful Muhammad had to change homes again. After that, he took up his abode with his uncle, who would take care of his further education. Muhammad did not go to school. Oh no, in those days there were scarcely any schools. Already as a child, he watched over the camels and the sheep of his uncle, just as Moses did in Midian. At the age of 11, he asked his uncle if he could go with the caravans which constantly departed from Mecca. His uncle gave him his consent immediately. Perhaps he was glad that in this way he would no longer have to take care of Muhammad. How this boy had to miss the love of parents. Now in Mecca there dwelled a rich widow who had many camels. Her name was Khadijah. At the age of 12, Muhammad entered into service of that widow. First, he was a common camel driver. Later, he became a leader, for she soon noticed that she had found an excellent worker in that young boy. For 13 years, he served her uninterruptedly. He put himself to the work with all his strength. She could rely upon him. He looked after her interests so well, as if it were his own business. At the age of 25, he married Khadijah. Through that marriage, he suddenly became wealthy, because all of her possessions had now become also his. Thereby, he no longer had to work for a living. Henceforth, when the caravans departed to foreign countries and cities, Muhammad remained at home. Before Muhammad married, he was busy, very busy, but now he had much leisure time. Oftentimes he went into seclusion, and then, for hours on a stretch, he could sit staring before him without ever being annoyed by it. Then he thought, he brooded, and he meditated. Perhaps the question arises in our mind, what did he meditate about, and what was he thinking about? About his gloomy, hard youth? No. What then? The Arabs, the people to whom Muhammad belonged, were really heathens. We know that the Arabs descended from Ishmael, the son of Abraham, and his Egyptian maid Hagar, don't we? This we told you at the time in the Bible history, didn't we? However, the true knowledge of God had been there in Arabia. We may be sure that Abraham had told the wonders of God to his son Ishmael. Also, the promises of God shall not have remained unknown to Ishmael. Hagar and her son were surely no heathens. They have known the truth, having been instructed therein by Abraham, although for them it had not been to salvation. Later, when the Jewish nation was scattered due to the captivity, many of those dispersed Jews went to live in Arabia. On the day of Pentecost, there were also Arabians among that assembled multitude. We do not know whether any of those Arabians were converted. That is very well possible. One day that shall be revealed in eternity. Finally, the Apostle Paul, after his conversion, lived in Arabia for 3 years. We can read this in Galatians 1, verse 17. You may be assured that he also preached there. There have even been Christian churches in Arabia. But alas, in Arabia, the Church of God had eventually wandered away from the pure doctrine. Also there, we see a fast declension. Mary, the mother of the Lord, is honored and revered like a goddess. Priests offer wafers to her. How silly, isn't that so? In the city of Mecca stood a large square temple, which was covered with a black curtain. They called that temple the Holy Kaaba. That word means cube. Well then, in the days of Muhammad, that temple was filled with 360 idols. Terrible, is it not? Indeed, in Arabia, there was nothing left of the pure knowledge of God. It was that which depressed Muhammad, and it filled him with concern. When he was in solitude and for hours sat staring before him, while reflecting and meditating, then he thought about the sad religion of his own people. That was not allowed to remain that way. That had to be changed. But yea, how? What must come in the place of that? Muhammad did not know that either. And about that he thought and meditated for hours on a stretch. Because Muhammad had made extensive journeys for many years and had visited many countries and cities, he had come in contact with many people. He learned to know people that were full-blooded heathens. But heathenism? Oh no, Muhammad would have nothing to do with that. He disliked heathenism. During his many travels, Muhammad had also learned to know people that were Christians. If they had only been God-fearing people, then they could have led Muhammad on the right way. But alas, he came into contact with the worst Christians which existed. We have told you in the preceding chapters that the Church of God had believed the lie. All sorts of abominable lies had crept into the church, and they were believed. We may read about that a few chapters back. Muhammad shrugged the shoulders for that Christianity. Muhammad would have nothing to do with that Christianity. He disliked that also, wholeheartedly. During his distant travels, Muhammad had also learned to know Jews. But Judaism did not fascinate Muhammad either. He also rejected the Jewish religion. But what then? The religion in Arabia was no good. Christianity, such as he had learned to know it, was no good. The Jewish religion was no good. But again, what then? Muhammad did not know that either. He meditated day and night about that. He lay thinking about that during long sleepless nights. And then Muhammad made a new religion. He had enough time for that. The new religion of Muhammad became a mixture of Christianity, Judaism, and heathenism. There was something of everything in it. This new religion was named after him. It was called Mohammedanism, or, with a strange word, Islam. Of course, we are all eager to know what kind of religion Muhammad made, isn't that so? Well then, I will try to tell you something about it. As I already told you, Muhammad did not want to have anything to do with heathenism and its many idols. He had a wholehearted dislike to the worship of many gods. No, many gods in whom we must believe, which we had to worship, did not exist. The priests made the people believe that, so that it would be better for them because then many offerings would be brought. For that reason, Muhammad said, "There is but one God," and he called that God Allah. He taught all people upon earth must honor and worship Allah. Because Muhammad suffered from epileptic fits, he at times had violent attacks. Then he frantically kicked and stamped all around. Then he often foamed at the mouth, and in his imagination he saw strange, odd things. If, after a while, he came to himself again, then in fear he ran to his wife. Then nervously and excitedly he told her what he had seen in his dreams. He imagined that he was tormented by devils and evil spirits which persuaded him and wanted to send him to perdition. Then Khadijah, his wife, endeavored to comfort and to encourage him. She said, "Why, no, they are no evil spirits that alarm you, but they are angels which you see." Finally, Muhammad began to believe it himself. Yea, that must be it. His wife must be right. Of course, they were angels of God, which appeared to him time and again. That was self-evident. It could be no different. Muhammad began to believe that he was an exceptional person. In his confused dreams, he saw the most wonderful things, and Muhammad believed that they were revelations from heaven. Being misled by his feverish notions, he imagined that the angel Gabriel often appeared to him, who then revealed many heavenly things to him. During those attacks, he received visions and apparitions. I will tell you about one of those visions. One day, Muhammad had one of those attacks again, and he dreamed that he stood by the Kaaba, or the temple in Mecca. The inhabitants of Mecca were asleep because it was midnight. Suddenly, a horse with wings stood next to him. He mounted that winged horse. Hardly is he seated upon that steed, and that animal flies away with furious speed. He feels the cool night air brush past his face. In an unbelievably short time, the horse brought him to Jerusalem. When he arrived there, the angel Gabriel was already waiting for him. Behold, there he ascends with the angel into the seventh heaven. In his dream, he notices that he enters heaven. All the saints and the thousands of angels come to meet him. They greet him reverently. Slowly, in a stately manner, he walks further until he is before the throne of Allah. He hears the voice of the Lord. His knees shake, but the hand of the Lord touches him, and new life and new strength flow through his trembling body. There, in heaven, he receives the charge out of the mouth of Allah to be God's prophet upon earth. He must become God's messenger. Now the angel Gabriel conveys him back to earth again. The winged horse is still waiting for him in Jerusalem. He mounts that animal for the second time, and with the same speed he is brought back to Mecca. In my mind, I see greatly surprised faces, and undoubtedly with many the question will arise, but was that then true? Did Muhammad really have those revelations? Those questions are soon answered. Of course that was not true. That was all nonsense and imagination of him. None of us shall ever believe that. It is a good thing, too. But Muhammad himself did believe that. Greatly elated, he hastened to his wife and told her those so-called wonderful heavenly revelations. Immediately, Khadijah also believed that her husband had been assigned by God Himself and was called as God's prophet. From that moment, it was firmly established to Muhammad that there was only one God, Allah, and he, Muhammad, was his prophet. It is true, there had been other prophets, even great prophets, Adam, Noah, Abraham, and Moses. They were all prophets. Jesus of Nazareth was also a great prophet, but he, Muhammad, was the greatest and the last prophet. He had to go and preach that all people, young and old, great and small, had to subject themselves to Allah. All people had to believe that he, Muhammad, was the greatest and last prophet. And Muhammad did go out and preach. Behold, there he walks through the streets of Mecca, his birthplace. Listen, again and again his monotonous cry resounds. Allah is great, and Muhammad is his prophet. The inhabitants of Mecca hear that call and understand those words. At first they look up in great astonishment and unbelieving, but then they burst out laughing. At first Muhammad did not have much fruit upon his preaching. Only his wife, Khadijah, and a cousin of him, a certain Ali by name, accepted that preaching as true and believed in him. But Muhammad perseveres. 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 10 years. After preaching for 10 years, there are only about 40 people that believe in him. He is heartily laughed at by all the other inhabitants of Mecca, and especially by his relatives. They mock and jeer him. Yea, finally they become hostile. They say scornfully, "What does that fellow imagine himself to be? He seems to be out of his mind." That enmity turns into hatred. They call him names. Yea, finally, they devise a plot to murder him. It becomes dangerous for Muhammad in Mecca, because in that place he is not sure of his life for a moment. In the year 622, he flees to Medina, the city which is situated to the north of Mecca. Muhammad himself does not want to speak of flight, because that is too humiliating to him. He said, "I will have nothing to do any more with my relatives or with my associates and people. If they refuse to believe in my mission, then I no longer acknowledge them as my relatives and my people. Then I break all bands with them. Henceforth, they are strangers to me." Behold, there he enters the gates of Medina, and through the streets of Medina resounds his cry, "Allah is great, and Muhammad is his prophet." In Medina, where the inhabitants do not know him as well as in Mecca, the people do believe in him. In a relatively short time, he has gathered a number of followers around him. Day after day he continues his preaching, and the number of those that believe in him becomes ever greater. Perhaps he hoped that they would call him back in Mecca, but that does not happen. Then Muhammad decides not to wait patiently any longer. He takes up arms and declares the holy war to all that do not believe in him. He shall compel them to obedience by force. Muhammad is not afraid, for often he stands in the front of the battle and leads his brave soldiers onward. His courage is contagious. in the year 630, hence 8 years after he had to flee from Mecca, he returns with an army of faithful followers, and his birthplace is conquered. Now he is the boss. He compels them to believe in his religion. And the inhabitants of Mecca give up the struggle. They also become Mohammedans and decide to follow him. Muhammad has gained a splendid victory, but he is not yet satisfied. No, not only Mecca and Medina, but the entire world must believe in him. He shall not rest before he has obtained that object. With contempt of death, his followers cast themselves into the fierce struggle. Fear? No, the Mohammedan soldiers do not fear. Muhammad has taught them that Allah has determined everything. They need not fear death. If it has not been determined that they shall fall, then they shall not be killed in battle. And if they are killed in battle, well, then it is the will of Allah, and they may not resist that will. Then, besides, that is not bad, for then they shall go directly to heaven anyway. There they shall be honored and feasted as heroes. There they shall fully enjoy everything which here upon earth they had to be without so often. One tribe after another is conquered. One nation after another subjects itself to the intruding Mohammedans. They are compelled. When Khadijah, his wife, who has followed him everywhere, dies, then Muhammad marries again. But he is not satisfied with one wife. He takes several wives at once. The holy war is carried on with undiminished intensity. 2 years later, all of Arabia has been subdued by him. Within only a few years, he has founded a powerful empire which becomes ever larger and expands itself ever further. According to some writers, Muhammad himself died of poison. One of his many wives wanted to see if he really was the great prophet such as he claimed to be. She thought, if he really speaks the truth, then a little poison will not harm him. Then Allah shall watch over him. However, if he dies from it, then he is a deceiver. She made the test and poisoned his food. Muhammad died a few hours later. This happened in the year 632. The religion of Muhammad is a wicked religion. He did not believe that the Lord Jesus was the Son of God, who came to deliver his people from sin, who came to bear the wrath of God against sin. Why, no, not Jesus of Nazareth, but Muhammad is the greatest, the last prophet. Muhammad did not have need of redemption. He rejected the revealed way of salvation, which is Jesus Christ and him crucified. For that reason, the Mohammedan religion is a false religion. However, before I finish this chapter, I want to tell you something else about the Mohammedan religion. The center for all Mohammedans is the Kaaba, or the Great Temple in Mecca. Wonderful stories are spread around about that Kaaba, which are readily believed by the Mohammedans. They say that the first Kaaba, or temple, was built by Adam in Mecca, but that first temple was destroyed by the Great Flood. After that, Abraham, assisted by his son Ishmael, built the Kaaba for the second time. During its erection, Abraham received a beautiful white stone from the angel Gabriel, which he cemented into the temple. However, now that stone is no longer white, but black. Oh, why is that? Ah, if we do not know, then the Mohammedans will tell us. They shall tell us that that beautiful stone has become black through sin. Through sin? How is that possible? Every Mohammedan who comes to Mecca and visits the temple gives that stone a kiss. By so doing, their sins are forgiven. That stone has become black through all those sins, as black as night. What nonsense! Isn't that so? God's word teaches us different. That happens when a person makes his own religion, and the saddest of all is that all that is still being believed by the millions of Mohammedans. Besides, all Mohammedans must pray several times a day to Allah. Then they must stand with their faces in the direction of Mecca, the same as Daniel once prayed in Babylon, and with an open window towards Jerusalem. Thus all Mohammedans pray with their faces toward Mecca. Another precept is that the Mohammedans must fast from time to time. That means that they are not allowed to eat at stated times. The Mohammedans are also obligated to give many alms, which means that they must give money to the poor. Finally, every Mohammedan must, if it is in any way possible, travel once during his life to Mecca so that there he may pray to Allah. For that reason, they call those journeys pilgrimages. Then at the same time, they can kiss that black stone that is cemented in there to obtain forgiveness of their sins. Whoever has made such a pilgrimage to Mecca is called a Haji. The Mohammedans also have their Bible. No, not our Bible, but an altogether different one. The Mohammedan Bible is called the Quran. Muhammad has made his followers believe that he has received the Quran from God. That, of course, is not true. The Quran is a tedious, boring book. It is filled with all sorts of proverbs and wonderful stories which Muhammad has supposedly experienced. All Mohammedan children must memorize texts from the Quran. I could tell you much more about the Mohammedan religion and the Quran, but I will not do so. Now we know the principal things. One thing more. We must not think that the number of Mohammedans consists of only a small group. Oh, no. Then we make a mistake. The number of followers of Muhammad is estimated to be more than 220 million. Isn't that terrible that so many millions of people are being misled by that false religion? How blessed, then, are we in that we have the pure word of God. Why do we not live in Mohammedan countries? Then we would also be followers of Mohammed. But the Lord has spared us from that. Do we also appreciate it?